Welcome to Talk Is Sheep, the official podcast of the Wild Sheep Society of British Columbia, brought to you by our title sponsor, Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. Come along with us as we take conversations that matter to you into the high alpine. We have partnered with Mountain Tough Fitness Lab to help get you in shape and mentally stronger. Whether you're a veteran hunter just starting out, the Mountain Tough app will take you to the next level. We personally train using the Mountain Tough programs, and we believe in it so much that we want to give you 6 weeks for free using code SHEEPBC. That's SHEEPBC. Check out Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. You won't be disappointed. Well, here we are on Talk is Sheep, and tonight's a pretty cool episode. There's anyone that's kind of been paying attention in the conservation community has heard some stuff come out of Arizona around the auction tags and the special sheep permits and a whole bunch of talk around that. And what we want to do tonight is kind of do a deep dive into what's going on with regards to auction permits. Arizona specifically, we're going to talk about that. We've got a specialist here that's going to help us out on that. And we're just going to talk about auction permits in general. So I'm really honored to welcome to Talk Is Sheep tonight. We've got Charlie Kelly. He's the current Wild Sheep Foundation treasurer and vice chair elect, and just does a ton of heavy lifting for the Wild Sheep Foundation, their board of directors. And we were also joined by Gray Thornton, CEO and president of the Wild Sheep Foundation. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Good to be on.
Thanks, Kyle.
Awesome. And we got Gregory tuning in tonight too, and he's handing me the baton tonight, so I get to talk a little bit, but Greg will be following up with all the tough questions. So anyway, gentlemen, to kind of get right into this, let's just kind of start off with a little bit of history about what the auction tag is, these auction permits, what's involved there for some of our listeners that maybe aren't as familiar with it as others.
Well, Kyle, I think I can chime in on that actually with a little bit of the history of you know, what a auction permit or what we call a conservation permit, but others, at least down in the lower 48, and I guess even with Alaska, would call the governor's permit. And basically it's taking a tag or tags or opportunity out of the pool of tags that you have, and providing it to the highest bidder on auction, or using that tag and putting it in a raffle. So, you know, as we in the sheep community know, sheep tags and permits are very coveted. Some of them are very, very limited. Sometimes you can apply for a lifetime to hopefully draw one, and you may not. The conservation permit or auction tag or governor tag is a way that agencies, state, tribal, First Nation, provincial, territorial can raise a lot of money. But honestly, what they're doing is they're putting you know, whoever's got the big bucks at the top of the heap. So, you know, that we can dive in a little bit on that, obviously, because that's therein lies some of the controversy. But really interesting is if you look back at how did this thing come about. And it was actually in 1980, Wyoming governor, it's Edgar Hirschler, was trying to figure out how we could raise some money for bighorn sheep conservation. You know, we know as sheep advocates that unlike mule deer, elk, pronghorn, other big game species, wild sheep license sales, quite frankly, just didn't pay their way. And also, unlike other species, which often hit their lows from a population standpoint in the late 1890s, bighorn sheep in particular hit their lows in North America, Canada, United States, Mexico, in the late 60s, early 70s. So it's a little different story. So, you know, a decade later, we were still trying to figure out how do we make wild sheep or bighorn sheep in particular relevant? How do we elevate their status within the agency? And Governor Hirschler tried something a little novel. He said, well, I tell you what, I'm going to take one of the tags that we have for Wyoming, and I'm going to give it to what we were then, the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep. With the caveat that 100% of the proceeds, and we sold it at auction, crazy enough, for $23,000, would go to bighorn sheep restoration in the state. Kyle, at that time, it was quite a bit different than they're done now. At that time, FNAWS, or the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, could choose where they spent the money, and they retained the money. It's quite different now. Now, states, provinces, tribes, First Nations that provide these permits are basically using a organization like Wild Sheep Society of BC or Wild Sheep Foundation or other ones of our partners as an agent to sell that. Some retain a percentage of it. Some do not. There's some states in particular that 100% of the auction sale goes back to the agency. Other jurisdictions allow the selling agent to retain a portion. The highest I'm aware of is 25% for Colorado. And then, as I pointed out, the lowest would be, you know, Arizona, Nevada, zero. So you sell one of those tags, you give 100% to the agency to put sheep, wild sheep on the mountain.
This episode is sponsored by our conservation partner, Frontiersman Gear. Thank you, Sitka Gear and Frontiersman Gear, for investing in healthy wildlife and sustainable ecosystems. Excellent, Gray. Really good background and perspective there. A couple things for our listeners. It's interesting. Wild Sheep Foundation is one of the leaders. A couple things that maybe we touch a little bit about on is that it's not necessarily exclusively sheep, right? There's other permits out there that are sold for other species. The sheep tends to be one of the most coveted and tends to do the well the most. And the Wild Sheep Foundation is an industry leader in selling these tags. And then the other thing, just maybe touch a little bit about on, is that I think there's some benefits there for some of the buyers because you're a registered 501c3, which in Canada would be a charity. In Canada, they don't allow us to play that game. We can't basically get tax incentives or write-offs. But I think through the U.S., there's an opportunity to do that. Is that correct, Gray? And that's some of the incentives that make it a little bit easier for buyers
to afford these tags? On several of those fronts. I mean, what happened is it started with sheep and it was so successful that other agencies started making special elk tags, mule deer, pronghorn, other New Mexico has Chemsbuck, their Ibex, so there's, it is now kind of a full gamut. And yes, very, very interesting that in the United States, if you're buying one of these permits through a 501c3, a charitable nonprofit, which Wild Sheep Foundation is and a number of our partners are, the value of that permit is determined by the cost that that person would pay to the agency. So, to make the math simple, say a bighorn sheep tag in Montana for a non-resident is $1,250. If you drew it in the lottery and then paid for it, if you buy the bighorn sheep permit on auction and you're a non-resident, you would deduct the amount that you paid less the $1,250. If you're a resident of Montana, a resident permit's only $125, so you can imagine that. You pay $300,000 for a bighorn sheep tag in Montana, and your tax deduction is basically everything less than $125. So there are huge tax incentives for the buyer. And bottom line, that tax incentive then benefits the agency, which then benefits the resource. So, certainly in my perspective, it's a win-win.
Yeah, well pointed out, Gray. Let's just talk a little bit of the actual numbers here. So it's staggering, and I'm still mesmerized. I've been going to Sheep Show now for years, and when we start bidding on the tags, and you just sit there and watch the room and the numbers that they churn out. But so, Charlie, let's touch a little bit on Arizona. I think Arizona this year sold for $430. Which was maybe a new record. But then there's other tags that have sold. I think they had that Antelope Island mule deer sold for $500,000. There was an Arizona mule deer tag that sold for $7.25 million. So some pretty staggering numbers. So this has got to be a big part of the funding proposition for a state like Arizona. Can you touch a little bit on Arizona and the case there?
You bet, Kyle. Yeah, and I'd also like to add a little bit of historical background on it for our listeners. Gray touched on it, even though this started with bighorn sheep in Wyoming, it led on in Arizona and other states to other big game animals. So I'll quickly go through kind of the historical background on these special big game tags, as we call them in Arizona. The board of directors from the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society, they were really the first ones to get aggressive with trying to get this program implemented in Arizona. And after seeing the great success in Wyoming that Gray just touched on, we worked closely with our legislature and our governor. And our first two tags issued in 1984 began with Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Tags. It didn't take long. The very next year, 1985, two more tags were added for elk, mule deer, pronghorn, and buffalo. So they did five species the very following year, following the great success of the sheep tags. In 1996, the program was expanded to eight of our species of big game, and then nine total in 1999. So they'd been doing two tags for these species all the way from 1984 up through 2004. And then in 2005, some legislation was enacted. They created a total of three tags, expanded it from two to three tags per species. And also a big move was the Arizona Big Game Super Raffle was formed. And the idea behind that organization was to make 10 of those tags, one each for every species, available to the ordinary sportsman through a raffle. And that's something our current commissioners were very, very highly in support of at the time. In 2009, the mountain lion was added as the 10th big game animal in Arizona. So right now, currently, we have 10 species of big game animals. Each one has three special big game tags. And so that's a total of 30 tags in aggregate, three each for all 10 of our big game species. And this applies to bighorn sheep. Since the special big game tag was started in 1984 for bighorn sheep, the regular draw tags for the normal Joe, they've increased from 44 in 1984 to 157 in 2023. That's an increase of 357%, which is pretty staggering. And the frustration these days, in my mind, is some people argue that these special tags, especially the auction tags, give more opportunity to the affluent buyer. But the small number of tags given out every year has greatly increased the number of regular draw tags for the ordinary sportsman due to the millions of dollars they raise. And those are spent 100% are spent directly on the ground conservation through our Arizona Habitat Partnership Program, our HPC program, as we call it. So it's been a huge success in Arizona for all 10 of our big game species.
That's fascinating, Charlie. So for our listeners, I think the key takeaway there is that there's this huge funding source, and some maybe resident or local hunters don't like the looks of it, yet sheep tags have gone from 44 to 157, so 3.5 times, and mostly on the backs of that funding that's allowed more resources on the landscape, which allows more tags, which allows more opportunities. So huge point there that we can't miss. Now, Charlie, can you give me a frame of reference how much funding is coming from auction permits to Arizona? Do you have any idea what the annual sort of
Great. Yeah, I'll talk about that next, Kyle. Gray touched on, Arizona's 100% return state. Any nonprofit that sells their tags at auction or through a raffle has to return 100% of the money raised to Arizona's Habitat Partnership Committee program. This year at the 2024 Sheep Show in January, wild sheep partnered with the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society, and we sold the Arizona Desert Bighorn Special Big Game Tag for a record $430,000. In comparison, in 2023, the total amount of money coming in from regular tag sales, licenses, and tags, resident and non-resident, only totaled $92,000. So on one hand, you can get $430,000 for one auction tag, and you're only getting $92,000 for the other 150 tags through the regular draw. And even on top of that, that $430,000 from the auction tag can be leveraged 3-to-1 with Pittman Robertson funds. So now you're talking closer to $1.7 million from that one auction tag. So especially with bighorn sheep, where the normal draw tags are very limited, there's very little revenue coming in for them. So we're highly dependent on the auction and raffle permits to fund our on-the-ground conservation. Since 1984, the Wild Sheep Foundation has raised and directed a little bit over $7.1 million to the Arizona Game and Fish Department by auctioning just one tag per year since then. Over the last 20 years, the Special Big Game Tag Program in Arizona has raised more than $9.6 million for bighorn sheep conservation and management. Of that, $6.8 million was raised through auction sales, and a lesser amount, $2.8 million, came through raffle sales. And that results in what we call a fundraising effectiveness ratio of more than 2-to-1 in favor of auctions over raffles. In more recent years, that ratio has approached and even exceeded 3-to-1. During the last 5 years, that would be 2019 through 2023, auction sales have raised $2.56 million for an annual average of $512,000, while raffle sales have raised $790,000, and that is a $158,000 average each year. So you're talking $512,000 for auctions, $158,000 for raffles. And then recently, starting in 2023, the Arizona Big Game Super Raffle, which is now called Conservation USA, has begun a restriction where you've got to be physically present in the state of Arizona to buy your ticket. So that has to do with raffle laws. And what has been selling for $200,000 for the raffle tag dropped down to $89,500 for 2023, which is less than half of what it's brought in the last 5 or 6 years. So really, we can't afford to lose upwards of $300,000 per year eliminating auction tags and relying solely on raffle tags moving forward. It's a real frustrating situation. Our commissioners don't look at it that way, but when you crunch the numbers, those are facts, hard figures that we're looking at.
Yeah, and we're going to dive right into like that decision and how that was made and sort of the outcomes of that in a minute. And before we do that, though, and great numbers, Charlie. Wouldn't expect anything less from you, but fantastic. Thank you. But Gray, I'm a little curious. Well, first of all, before we jump into you, Gray, does 100% of those funds go to sheep, Charlie, or do they direct it to other resources as well? Is it the entire department, or is it exclusively to wild sheep?
Well, out of all 10 of the auction tags for different big game species, whether they're sold at auction or through a raffle, those are directed the Game and Fish Department's Habitat Partnership Committee, and they have pretty stringent accounting, and they keep track of what has been contributed per species and what's been spent every year. So that $480,000 or $430,000 we got this year went directly to the HPC program. The accounting reflects it, and then we meet in January every year, the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society and the Game and Fish Department. We go through all, like the Wild Sheep Grant and Aid Program, we go through all the applications, we rate them, and then we fund those that fit the budget. And it's not unusual for a couple projects to not get finished during the year, mostly because of paperwork, BLM and Park Service and NEPA and all that stuff it takes to actually get a project off the ground. And so if that money isn't spent, it rolls over into the next year's budget. but all 10 species are accounted for separately, so we know exactly how much has been raised and how much has been spent annually for on-the-ground conservation. Make sense, Kyle?
Okay, great. Yeah, it does very much. Yeah, a lot to unpack there. And I guess for our listeners, too, then a huge takeaway for me when you were talking is the PR match, the Pittman-Robertson Act, where the federal government will match funding. So we take that $430,000 and they match it 3-1, so $1.7 million. That's a huge lift and a huge loss in that case with the permit going away. So great. Let's talk a little bit about the Wild Sheep Foundation and the numbers that you guys generate. I know that it's significant funding through tribal, state, and provincial agencies. Just talk a little bit about that, because I want to get a magnitude. You know, Charlie, where you know when you're talking tags, $430,000, $7.1 million directed. Let's talk a little bit about the sort of money that the foundation itself is generating through these auctions.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. And you go back to 1980. It's pretty incredible. $82 million has been raised and directed to agencies, just by Wild Sheep Foundation. And that's not, you know, any of the percentage that we may retain. That is money back to, you know, provincial, tribal, state, territorial agencies. So 82 million as of this last sheep show. You know, you look at just the 2024 sheep show, we sold 29 permits, just about $6.5 million brought in. We average about 10% that we're able to retain. So $5.7 million was directed to the agencies. But, you know, Kyle and Charlie, you certainly know this. We raise that money and so there's $5.7 million that's going to agency sheep programs, or, you know, because we sold pronghorn tags, you know, we'll sell goat tags. So, you know, there's other species that are benefiting from it for sure. But then Wild Sheep Foundation also, we budgeted $3.6 million in other grant and aid programs. So, you know, you look at the auction tags, it's a component of what we give, but it's not all of it. I mean, this year we're on track to direct $9.2 million into mission program funding that's benefiting the sheep resource, other wildlife, habitat, education, advocacy. So it's, you know, it's pretty amazing. And you know, Kyle, I think you said it. You know, there's a lot to unpack, and you know, the numbers are staggering. And maybe we can make it more relevant to the listeners if we talk just percentage of agency funding, because I think that also is a pretty impactful number. Periodically there's challenges to this system, which are good. I mean, you know, we always need to be transparent and intellectually honest. Are we doing the right thing? You know, is it consistent with the North American model? So a decade ago, I challenged our conservation staff to get with the agencies that make up the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. Those are, you know, territorial, state, provincial, and some tribal in the Western U.S. and Canada. And back then they looked at the dollars brought in from an auction or raffle tag, and then the percentage that represented of the agency's funding. And a decade ago, it was 74% of all agency wild sheep conservation funding comes from an auction or raffle tag. And then if you listen to Charlie's, you know, excellent talk on the ratio of dollars from auction to raffle, very spot on there, because the majority and the lion's share come from those auction tags. I have challenged one of our biologist contractors to give us a refresh of that to see what's happened in a decade. So he is, Clay Brewer, has been working on this for about 8 months, working with agencies in the U.S. and Canada. And it's really interesting. And it kind of proved what we've seen. I mean, Wild Sheep Foundation Sheep Show this year, 13 new permit records. And it seems like every year there's more permit records. And we certainly could talk on the why on that. But really interesting. Used to be 74% of all agency funding came from an auction or raffle tag. Now in the United States, it's just shy of 83%. And in Canada, it's 62%. So you average that out, it's about 79%. So in a decade, we've increased the amount that these tags are relevant and significant to funding agency work by 5%. So pretty significant. You know, the bottom line is, this is a special form of fundraising, and it's a part of something that we call the wild sheep economy.
Well, huge numbers, Gray, very enlightening and incredible. So we look at that, say we're roughly at that 80% mark, Charlie, if Arizona holds true to the average 83%, and that's the case. And so let's talk a little bit about what's happened in Arizona here over the last few months, the process. I know you have been very intimate with the process about the Fish and Game Commission, what they've done. I know the Wild Sheep Foundation did their very best effort to sort of educate the commission and those involved about the benefits. Talk a little bit about how we got to where we are today. Is this something that has been brewing for decades, or is it just a case of a rogue commissioner that's co-opted the entire board? Or just give us a little bit of perspective there, please.
You bet, Kyle. What I'm going to share with you guys now is more of a personal take on it. It's not something that's published by the department or commission, but I think what I'm going to outline is stuff that I've noticed over the last couple decades. And a lot of my opinions are shared by the wildlife conservation organizations in Arizona. There's really two main things, in my opinion, that drive the commission and our Arizona Game Department. And number one is they're focused on protecting the rights of sportsmen, especially hunters. I don't think fishermen face the challenges that hunters do. And this is probably more important, number two. The commission is very focused on protecting the right of our Arizona Game and Fish Department to manage wildlife and not let wildlife management be decided at the ballot box. About 5 or 6 years ago, the Humane Society of the United States came to Arizona, tried to gather enough signatures on a ballot to get mountain lion and bobcat and cat hunting eliminated in Arizona. And we were able to defeat that effort. But the last thing we want to do is take away the right of wildlife management from our department and put it on the ballot box. And it's not just Arizona. At our Reno Spring Board meeting 3 or 4 days ago, we were talking about the challenges Colorado's facing now with similar ballot initiative that they want to take mountain lion hunting and eliminate that in Colorado. So it's not only a state issue in Arizona, but other states around the country. And let me just quickly go through a chronology of some actions our commission has taken in the last decade or two. In 1994, the commission banned trapping on all public land. That was really a big one. In 2017, the Game and Fish Department and Commission implemented major changes to the Mountain Lion Management Plan in an attempt to prove it was actively managing mountain lion populations. This change, in my opinion, was due to the attempt by the Humane Society of the United States to get mountain lion and cat hunting stopped by public vote. When they did the major changes, they created zones around the state, cut down on the take of female lions, and established quotas in all the different zones. So it used to be you could hunt pretty much statewide most of the year, and now zones close. You're not able to hunt after they hit the quota. 2019, this was another big one. Our Game and Fish Commission and Department took the word trophy out of any language used by the Department or the Commission. You won't hear the word trophy or trophy hunting used anywhere in any of their communications. Also in 2019, the Game and Fish Commission and legislature banned organizing hunting contests for predators. There were several contests going on every year, mostly in antelope areas. I'm trying to cut down on the coyote population just prior to fawning for antelope. And they were very effective in helping the antelope populations, but they were not popular with the non-hunting public. So we passed a ban on those. In 2021, this was another big one. The commission implemented a ban on trail cameras used for the purpose of taking or aiding in the take of wildlife. So we were one of the first states to implement a trail camera ban. And then this most recent one was done at the commission meeting in March. And let me preface their decision by sharing that this all began about a year ago, and the commissioners were wanting to take a deep dive and look at auction tags, and they were concerned about some of the perception of affluent people buying them and not giving the chance to ordinary sportsmen like the North American model, in their opinion, encourages. And so about a year ago, they went out to all the wildlife organizations that have traditionally sold both raffle and auction tags in the past. They put a questionnaire out. What do you think about raffle tags? What do you think about auction tags? Have you got any ideas on how to change them? You know, what's the pros? What's the cons? What are some better alternatives to raffle or auction tags? They gathered all this data and presented it to the department. And really the takeaway was no group that was involved previously on selling tags came up with any better alternatives than auction and raffles. And so you would think the commission would say, well, we need to keep the current process in place, but they really ignored that. So unfortunately, at the March meeting 3 or 4 weeks ago, I want to kind of read for folks that don't understand what was voted on. The 30 big game tags I referenced earlier, those are created by state statute. And it gives the commission the right to award up to 30 tags to these nonprofits to sell every year. And it says they may issue them. They're not required to issue them. They may issue them. And they always have issued all 30. But they do have the discretion to not award all of them. So what the actual motion that was passed said, I move that the commission instruct the director of the Game and Fish to include in the special big game tag application letter a paragraph added to the current letter stating that for the commission allocation plan for the upcoming 2025 through 2026 hunting season, that 3 tags per species will be continued to be donated to wildlife conservation organizations for sale. 1 tag per statute will go to the Conservation USA Big Game Super Raffle. That's 1 each for all 10 species. The other organizations are invited to sell the remaining special big game tags. However, 1 must be a non-auction format. Included in this motion is the direction that for the next year, 2026 through 2027 season, auction sales of Arizona special big game tags will not be permitted. So my personal opinion and those of most wildlife conservation organizations is the process this upcoming year, they're going to award them in June, isn't too bad. It really encourages the groups to go out and find new alternatives for 1 of the 3 tags, but it still allows for 1 auction tag where they've always done well. And following that process, I think we're going to have some solid takeaways on whether or not there are other alternatives that work or don't work. But what I really have a lot of heartburn over, and a lot of the groups do as well, is I think they should have passed it for next year to encourage people trying new alternatives. But before they've even come up with a viable solution, they've already made a decision to totally eliminate auction tags for the following year. And I think that's a huge blunder on their part.
So, like, let's just look at the dollars and cents of this, not even, like, you know, all the layers of it. Where's the economy around this? Where do you go for the funding? Because these numbers are, we're literally talking, you know, in the case of the sheep permit with our Pittman Robertson, $1.7 million. So what's the replacement? You've just verified that the raffle's not going to cut it. You can't sell it at auction. So what? How are you funding your program?
Well, that's part of the other big pushback from the wildlife groups is we've asked those questions before this motion was passed in March. And their comeback is, you know, if you come up with us with viable projects, we'll find the funding somewhere. They haven't identified it. They've just said, we're going to find the funding somewhere with no identified sources. And I look back at the last two or three years when we were still bringing in a lot of money from these auction tags into the HPC program. And on top of that, the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society has funded close to $80,000 for water trailers, water hauling trailers. We just overhauled their transplant trailer equipment, built all new transplant boxes, bought about a $40,000 new gooseneck transplant trailer to transplant pronghorn and bighorn sheep. And we continue to augment their budget with our own personal budget from the Bighorn Sheep Society. And my thinking is, if you've had to rely on us for this outside funding to even get that stuff purchased, how are you going to make up for hundreds of thousands of dollars that was previously brought in from these auction tags? And you not only lose the auction tag revenue, but you lose that 3-to-1 match from Pittman Robertson. So I think the commission has really, really blown it when they haven't been able to identify funding to replace what's been brought in the past with auction tags.
Yeah, well said, Charlie. So it sounds like the commission is doing this out of the concern for hunting. It's optics, social license. They want to protect. You know, it sounds like it's altruistic, that the intention's there. Obviously, there's some nuances that they haven't thought through, or maybe they have thought through, and that, you know, they have something in their back pocket. But what are some of, obviously, there's the optics, right? What the non-hunter sees, and oh, like, I guess maybe a wealthy individual that has access to wildlife, the optics is ugly there. But what are some of the detractors? And it's even controversial in the hunting community. So let's talk a little bit about that, Gray. Maybe if you want to touch on what you've heard over the years of all the criticisms, or a number of the criticisms around the tags and the permits, and why people don't like them.
It's funny. I think we should bring in Shane Mahoney to this conversation. You know, he's arguably the world's foremost spokesperson and advocate on the North American wildlife conservation model. And you know, I had a very interesting conversation with him. He was actually here in Montana staying with me, and, you know, we were just visiting. Rare that he can just chill a little bit. So I was floating he and his wife down the Yellowstone River, and, you know, he was on the bow. We were fly fishing. He was really more interested in just looking around and enjoy. But, you know, in Shane's, you know, bellowing voice, you know, he just says, you know, Gray, I want to talk to you about something. And I said, well, you know, what's that, Shane? And he goes, well, you know, I've heard you a number of times in speeches say that this auction permit thing, or the conservation tag or the government tag, is a bastardization of the North American model. And I used to make that statement. I would say, well, it's a little bit of a bastardization of this egalitarian model. But it works. And then talk about, you know, what Charlie's been pointing out, and what, you know, we've been discussing on the huge numbers and its relevance to wildlife conservation. And he says, Gray, you're wrong. He says that it is not a bastardization. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. And I, you know, when Shane speaks on the model, you better listen. And he says, you know, the model provides the agencies that are charged with wildlife conservation and habitat conservation to fund that in the most efficient way. And he says, from what I understand, you know, these auction tags, and, you know, when you look at the money and you listen to Charlie's numbers, it is the most efficient and effective way. Now, if someone can come up with a better mousetrap, right on. You know, I mean, you know, we're in this for raising money for the resource and doing good for the resource. So if there's a better way, I'm all ears. But, you know, at the time, Shane, you know, Shane pointed out, no, it's absolutely consistent with the model. So wanted to state that on the outset. Outset. The challenge is that, you know, whether it is wealth envy, whether it is, you know, hey, I want a level playing field. You know, it's, well, if there's, you know, if there's 30 tags pulled out of the Arizona tag pool, well, that's 30 opportunities that the regular gal or regular guy who can't bid on these, and I'm certainly one of those guys, I couldn't bid on these, you know, that's 30 tags that are out of the pool that I would have the opportunity to win on a draw. So, you know, it's an understandable argument, Kyle. But I kind of reflect back and, you know, I'll tell a little story about Montana. Montana is the only state other than Alaska, but the only lower 48 state where you have the opportunity to over the counter get a bighorn sheep tag. It's in our unlimited areas. There's about five. Used to be about 200 some odd people applied for it. Now it's about 400 to 500 people apply for it. The quotas are extremely low, five units, two sheep per unit. So 10 sheep total. And, you know, do the math, 500 people applying for them, but it's a guaranteed tag. So it's unlimited license, limited quota. So I was very, very fortunate in 2014 to be able to harvest a bighorn sheep as a non-resident. I was living in Wyoming at the time. And I think that tag cost me $750. So anyone, you know, looking at bighorn sheep or stone sheep costs right now knows that $750 is a pretty amazing price for a do-it-yourself bighorn sheep hunt. You know, and I go back to that 2014. This was one of the reasons why we did that study. Back in 2014, the data that we had from Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is that they would raise about $120,000 on their unlimited tag sales and their limited entry draw. You know, the LEH tags, about $120,000-$150,000. That same year, we sold the Montana bighorn sheep governor's tag or special permit for, I think it was $335,000. So, you know, you look at that 330 versus the 120, and yeah, there's a huge amount of money, but I looked at it this way. I was, you know, I'm a regular guy. I was able to participate in a sheep hunt and actually be successful, harvest a ram for $750. And my $750 was a part of that $120,000 total. Well, I don't know about British Columbia, but in Montana, you couldn't buy a pickup truck and hire a biologist for $120,000 a year. And you still can't. And so I looked at it this way. I thought, you know, thank God that there was some guy that was willing to give of his treasure, you know, the $330,000 to go into bighorn sheep conservation with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks that enabled me, a regular guy, to have the opportunity to buy a $750 tag, in effect, over the counter and go bighorn sheep hunting. So, you know, I look at it in a completely different way. I am so grateful that there are men and women that are, you know, have the means, and God bless them for it, that have the means that are willing to invest in wild sheep conservation, albeit that, yes, they're getting the special benefit. And yes, in the U.S., you're getting a tax benefit. But they're giving that money to wild sheep conservation instead of some university for, you know, some other program or some other charity that's very noble and very, you know, very deserving. But they're choosing to give their largesse to wild sheep conservation. And all of us benefit. So, yeah, it may be controversial. Yes, it's putting somebody at the top of the heap, But boy, in my particular view, I am so grateful that there are men and women that are willing to do that. So us regular people will have this opportunity. My fear is without those funds, we're not going to be able to see as many sheep be put on the mountain. And certainly from the NGO standpoint, we're going to be struggling to come up and help these agencies with their shortfall. Because if other agencies follow Arizona's suit, we've got real trouble ahead on wild sheep conservation funding in North America.
Yeah, really well said, Gray. Charlie, anything you want to add in there around, why the controversy? You've been dealing with it there in Arizona. Any further thoughts on that?
You bet, Kyle. Great question. I had some one-on-one conversations with individual commissioners, and I put it down on paper tonight, and it was really four major pushbacks that the commissioners mentioned to me. The first one, in their opinion, auction tags monetize wildlife, which goes against the North American model. Again, they push it for auction tags, not raffle tags. They think it's fine to monetize raffle tags for wildlife, but not auction tags. But that's their spin on it. Their second argument, they think auction tags benefit the affluent that they can afford to buy them and not the general public hunter. Again, against the North American model that said wildlife belongs to the public, not a chosen few. Probably the biggest incident that caused a lot of this is in the recent past, about 5 years ago, a few affluent auction tag buyers hunted with a disregard for fair chase principles. And with the popularity of social media we're all involved with these days, these hunts were out there for the public to watch, and they really incensed many fair chase ethical hunters and non-hunt hunters, as well as some of our current commissioners. Some of the videos they saw were just horrible with what these auction hunters were doing. And the last one is some commissioners have expressed a concern that a small percentage of affluent auction tag buyers have actually bought a large percentage of these special auction tags through the auction process. They think the same people buy the same tags year in and year out. And the one thing I pointed out to them, I was involved with the Arizona Big Game Super Raffle for over 16 years. I was the treasurer, so I saw the money go in and out. And for years, there have been raffle ticket buyers, not a lot of them, but a handful that will come in and buy $10,000 to $40,000 in tickets in one swoop. And I know one car dealer in particular that won the Arizona Mule Deer tag twice in less than 5 years, and he also bought it once by auction. So our commissioners keep saying, well, it's not fair to let these same buyers buy it over and over with auctions, but it's okay for raffles. Well, like I told them, it's happening with raffles too that you keep trying to promote. So I don't think that argument holds water. And then, in 2 years in Arizona at least, if they totally phase out auction tags and the only real avenue to buy or get a chance is going to be through raffles, I can't help but believe these affluent buyers don't even buy larger and larger blocks of raffle tickets, increasing their odds. And how's the ordinary guy that's going to buy one $10 ticket compete to the guy with the guy that's buying $5,000 tickets at a whack? So I don't think their argument to continue supporting raffle tags at the expense of auction tags holds up. And another two more thoughts I had, Kyle, wanted to share with the group is we had our monthly Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society board meeting last night, and we were discussing whether or not we were going to apply for one of the raffle tags that's available this year for Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep and market it. And we talked amongst ourselves, and if we were to take that on and do it justice and market it properly to raise a significant amount of money, the expense to do so would be about 15 to 20% of our annual operating budget. With an auction tag, the most efficient way to sell them, it costs us virtually next to nothing to sell it through wild sheep at the sheep show. But if we were to try to raffle these tags instead of auction them, we would have to divert about 15 to 20% of our annual budget from conservation work to marketing. One thing people don't forget or remember in Arizona, we give 100% of the tag proceeds back to the department. So just the credit card fees at 3%, if you're going to raise $200,000 through a raffle, at 3%, that's $6,000 just in credit card fees. And on top of that, you've got marketing costs for e-blasts and ads and magazines and your other marketing efforts. So getting away from auction tags puts a big burden on the individual wildlife conservation organizations to absorb the marketing costs through a raffle. And the other thing that just kind of popped in my head one night, I'm laying in bed thinking about all this, and it takes one person to buy an auction tag and fund it. It usually takes 1,000 to 2,000 people to buy enough raffle tickets to raise the same amount of money through a raffle. So it's really easy to auction off one tag to a buyer, but to replace that, you've got to get 1,000 to 2,000 buyers willing to do it through a raffle. So it's just a much more difficult way to raise money using a raffle versus an auction.
Charlie, is it possible that the commission's hedging their bets, thinking that, okay, if we take the auction buyer out of this, maybe they get a dozen of those auction buyers or 15 of them that go in, dump 50 grand in each, buy up all these tickets, and maybe there's a chance that they increase their funding above and beyond what they're doing with the permit themselves? Are they that cunning or that calculated, or do you think they just don't care?
I would say they're that naive. One thing they did, Kyle, in the March meeting is they had one of the Game and Fish personnel put together projected income from non-auction alternatives, mostly raffles and stuff like that. And there were so many just glaring mistakes in his presentation. Like, they're saying his assumption was, okay, we raise $200,000 by raffling off this group of tags. If we create three raffles during the year, we'll sell three times that, $600,000 in raffle tickets. That's not the case. You're still depending on the same pool of buyers to buy those tickets. And it's just asinine to think you're going to conduct one raffle and raise X amount of dollars. And if you do three raffles selling the same tags, you're going to sell three times as much. You've got a limited pool of buyers. You may say a little bit, sell a little more, but you're certainly not going to triple what you're doing with one raffle. And just glaring mistakes like that. And, you know, the commissioners seem to think they're going to make just as much money with these alternative programs. The other two things they kept pointing out, and I was actively involved with both of them, they said every time we've tried to do a new alternative, it's turned out really well. And one example, it's called the Jaws and Paws raffle that the Big Game Super raffle ran. And that started about 5 years ago, and one of these commissioners came to us and said, you know, we've got a javelina tag, a mountain lion tag, and a bear tag, and they're not raising much money. What if we awarded those to you? And I was the marketing director then, and I got with my committee, and I said, you know, the javelina tag's 100% draw. The bear in most areas is over-the-counter. The mountain lion's over-the-counter tag. So people really aren't willing to spend a lot of money on a raffle tag they could just buy from the department. I said, the only way we're going to raise a significant amount of money is if we hire an outfitter and pay for them with our own money to provide a guided hunt where there's a high success rate. And I got a lot of pushback from a couple of committee members, like, why are we going to spend our own money on promoting, you know, and paying for state tags? And I said, well, without it, I don't think you're going to be able to get any more than they already have in the past. So they reluctantly agreed to try it, and we put those three tags in a bundle called the Jaws and Paws raffle. And if you won it, you got all three tags, a javelina, a mountain lion, and a bear. Plus, you got an outfitter for a week to take you and hunt for those. And if you needed more than a week, you could contract with them separately. And we raised $49,500 the first time around. And I did a spreadsheet on it, and that was six times more than the groups had gotten for those three tags previously by just auctioning them at small fundraisers and stuff. So, you know, the department thought, oh man, this is great. We can get way more money with some of these alternative programs. But the problem is we had to spent almost $10,000 of our money marketing it and paying for the outfitter. So, yeah, we did well on it, but it took money out of our budget to make it happen. And the other big one that they point out is a huge success is called the Big Game Hero, and that's a voting contest. And what you do is we did it three times. We did it with a Vermejo Ranch elk tag. And the way it works is we bought the hunt for face value, about $28,000. We didn't ask for a discount. We wanted the winner to be treated just like anybody else that would buy that hunt. It's on a real exclusive Ted Turner property in northern New Mexico. And the way it works is you go out through social media and your other contacts and you get people to vote for you. And it costs a dollar to vote. And you can't vote for yourself, but you encourage family, friends, and followers on social media to vote for you. And that thing raised $500,000. We did that as a test run, and we did it the following year with a mule deer tag. We didn't want to gamble with a state special big game tag. But the second year around, knowing that it worked, we went in and convinced the department to sell us the mule deer tag for $500,000, which was more than it's ever sold for. And what they do is we'd have two winners in the voting contest. The first one would win the Arizona Special Big Game Mule Deer Tag, and the second winner would win the elk tag at the Vermejo Ranch. And that raffle raised right at $1 million. And we gave $500,000 to the department for the guaranteed mule deer tag, and then the other $500,000 the Big Game Super Raffle retained. And if you read the statute, 100% of the money needs to be returned to the department. And I didn't agree with it, but they kind of did a workaround with the Attorney General at Game and Fish, and they agreed that, well, if you buy it for more than it's ever sold for, we consider that a sale, and you can do whatever you want with it afterwards. So they raised $500,000 for the mule deer tag, which was a new record, and then they pocketed $500,000 for themselves. The big problem was it was a one-off. The company that a third-party vendor did this contest for them and said, we'll never do it again. We lost money on it. Even though it raised $1 million, they lost money conducting it. And they said everybody was confused on how long the season was and what the trophy potential was. And so they did it once, but they don't want to repeat it again with an Arizona special big game tag. So the commissioners keep saying, oh, these are two examples of some great programs that have worked, but they don't tell the whole story. And the big one was the voting contest, which was a one-off. They won't repeat it again in the future. So I think their argument just doesn't hold up.
And a huge amount of cost and capital and resources to put this on. Whereas you put a tag on a cheap show and it's pretty straightforward. There's not a lot, these tags, because what Wild Sheep Foundation's done, sell themselves now. People are coming them there exclusively for that in many cases. So, it's definitely a lot more capital that's going to be invested to get an ROI, probably nowhere near that amount. Great. Let's touch a little bit on how this affects the Wild Sheep Foundation. So, Arizona, as we know, 100% of the proceeds go back to Arizona Fish and Game. So it's kind of no loss in that regard. But what if there's other tags? Obviously, we're talking, we said 6.5, and if 6.5 million last year at Sheep Week, and if you lose 10 to, or you retain 10 to 15%, that's $650 to million dollars in revenue. So it's a revenue loss. And then there's the appeal of Sheep Show. That's kind of the appeal of the auction night. People come there just to watch the magic around the permit. So just talk a little bit about, I guess, and I think we touched a little bit on it at our last board meeting around, a SWOT analysis. What if this was to go away? How's it going to affect
the foundation? It's a great question. And you kind of teed it up really well. Historically, the foundation's getting, about 10%, and then we're turning that right back into the agencies, in grant and aid programs. So it's about $500,000 a year that goes to the foundation. This year was a real anomaly just on just the unbelievable dollars that were raised. We were at about 772 or so from the, you know, the percentage, you know, as you pointed out, anything from, you know, 0 to 15%. So, you know, that's significant, no doubt. But, you know, you look at our sponsors, you know, we do a little over $1 million in cash sponsors. You know, those are, for the most part, industry partners of ours. Some of that's appeals. So, you know, it all adds up. So it is a significant amount of money. It's not the lion's share. But what you pointed out, I think, is the more important thing that we would lose. And you know, that is the wow factor, the show appeal, or the entertainment value. You know, the fact of the matter is watching, you know, a sheep tag go for $600,000 or, you know, our friends in Utah selling the Arizona mule deer for, you know, $750,000. I mean, the entertainment value of that, you know, just kind of vicariously living through someone that can spend that kind of money on one opportunity is really amazing. And you know, we at Wild Sheep Foundation don't invest in high dollar, you know, music entertainers. You know, we have friends that, you know, we certainly will take care of, and they come and they play. But the return on investment for us is really not there. The return on investment for us is the wow factor of watching those auctions. You know, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday night auctions at the Sheep Show are mind-boggling. And you know, just to you know, to see that and to experience that and the energy in the room and you know, to watch, you know, two gladiators duke it out with their pocketbooks where wild sheep conservation is benefiting is big entertainment. So, you know, losing that would be very significant to the Wild Sheep Foundation. You know, you could also argue that, you know, the women and men that come to the show that are bidding on these tags are also going to be bidding on some of the other things that we sell. You know, one of the most incredible things that happened at the Sheep Show this year, item number 12 on Saturday night, we offered the 100th Marco Polo Society member. Marco Polo Society was created in 2008 and then launched in 2009 with the idea of over 10 years bringing in 100 donors at $100,000 for $10 million to the foundation. It took a little longer than 10 years, but you know, we had sold the 99th and said, well, you know, to make it exciting and make it fair to all comers that may want it. Because people started buying to see if they could, hey, I want number 100. Well, bottom line, item number 12, Saturday night, 10 very generous members of Wild Sheep Foundation joined together, each put in $100,000, and they bought Marco Polo number 100 for $1 million. There's never been a $1 million bid on anything at the Wild Sheep Foundation. And quite frankly, I don't know of, you know, anywhere else. Well, that obviously, you know, just creates a vibe in the room that's, you know, just unheard of. You know, I think we sold 60 items on auction, $6.5 million, added, you know, averaged about $107,000 an item. So, you know, with those all weren't auction tags, I can assure you that. So, you know, that kind of clientele in a banquet hall, you know, fired up to buy these permits also, are fired up to buy other items. So, you know, that would be a significant loss to the Wild Sheep Foundation. It would be a significant loss to other partners in the industry that are selling these tags. And, you know, we would have to make up for that. So, and then, you know, I guess you could take it, Kyle, a step further. If we didn't make up for that, Then that's less money that we can direct into grant and aid programs benefiting wildlife and habitat. So, you know, that is exactly why we call it the wild sheep economy. You know, it's an entertainment value that raises a heck of a lot of money that does good thing for wild sheep, wildlife, and wildlands.
Great perspective there, Gray. Is that something that you think lots about? Is it something you're worried about? And, you know, is there a risk that other, jurisdictions, states, provinces, territories, tribal agencies are going to follow suit? Is that, obviously, it's something you're aware of, you got your eye firmly on the ball there, but is it something you're really worried about?
If you just look at, you know, which is a little bit out of the purview of this podcast, but if you look at some of the actions in some coastal western states on the makeup of the commission, they're moving away from the historical, you know, consumptive user of wildlife, the angler, the hunter, the trapper. And are working to push or even mandate. Some governors are doing this, mandating that what they call diversity of commissioners. But many of them have absolutely no connection to the traditional outdoor sports, or worse, are actually anti-hunters or anti-use people. So. Kyle, combined with that dynamic, I hate to bring politics in it, but, you know, we're a polarized country down south. The blue and the red and the fight between the presumptive, you know, wealthy against the, you know, the non-wealthy. And so, you know, you get that wealth envy, and I would say that, you know, you could make the argument that some of these commissioners that are going to be coming in would be promulgating the exact same thing that happened in Arizona. Not necessarily for those reasons. Arizona had their own. But the result would be the same, and that is a loss of funding for wildlife, and in particular, because wild sheep conservation depends so much on it. You know, as I pointed out, 83% in the United States, you know, 79% in North America. If that 79% goes away, how the heck are we going to make it up?
Yeah, great question. So with that front of mind and with the changes in Arizona and possible threats elsewhere, BC, you always hear rumblings around that too, that there's people just a little disgruntled with the whole prospect of, an expensive minister's tag. What do we do sort of, you know, if our listeners care about it, how do we stem, you know, these risks? And Charlie, did you foresee this? Did you foresee the commission this head in this direction? Did you kind of have a heads up 2 years down the road, or just this kind of came out of the blue the last 6 months? And then what do we do to make sure it doesn't happen elsewhere? How do we get it back?
I think we were really surprised that the commission would make a decision like this, ignoring the feedback of the wildlife conservation organizations that have supported this thing for 30 or 40 years. After doing that exhaustive year-long study, we thought that would open their eyes as to the importance of maintaining what we've already got. 95% of the feedback at the meeting, you know, supported maintaining the current auction tag program, and the commissioners obviously had their minds made up. They already had pre-written position statements they read before they voted on it. So we just couldn't believe they could make, in my opinion, a really uneducated decision, and they don't have any backup plan. You know, if they had additional revenue that they could rely on, or designated alternative programs other than auction tags identified, it would be great, but they have neither. So I think, you know, making this bold change without having either a designated alternative revenue stream and alternative methods to sell these tags that aren't auction, they didn't have either one, but they still went ahead and passed it. And the two things, I've thought about it a lot, Kyle, and two things I wanted to share with our audience, and I'm sure everybody on this call probably, Gray and yourself, has other ideas, but I think two things we need to do is educate the various states and provincial game departments and commissioners especially on the past history and the success of auction tags and the dependable revenue stream they produce. WAFWA would be a great opportunity to present this kind of information. I know Gray mentioned he's already got Clay Brewer working on that, so we'll have our ducks in a row, and I hope we make that an agenda item at the next WAFWA get-together. And the one thing I wanted to bring up tonight, and I want to bring it up in front of our board of directors next time we meet, is I think Wild Sheep should consider drafting a document, and I just came up with a title. It can be tweaked, but I would call it the Auction Tag Buyer Stewardship Policy. And what it would do, it would detail the great importance of auction tag revenue and how it generates the lion's share of bighorn sheep and other big game conservation efforts and funding. And more importantly, the responsibility of each and every auction tag buyer is to maintain the integrity and continued longevity of the auction tag process. It should encourage auction tag buyers to adhere to fair chase in the ethical, sportsmanlike, and lawful pursuit and taking of free-ranging wildlife. They need to respect the non-hunting public by not filming or sharing on social media videos containing kill shots, impact footage, animals hitting the ground or animals suffering, videos containing footage showing disrespect to animals, and videos that include foul language, unsuitable family audiences, or the non-hunting public. These are just some quick ideas I think it could be done better if we put some effort into it. The Wild Sheep Foundation led the industry when we drafted our wild sheep film and video standards a year or so ago. And I think drafting a document like this that we would give out, I think it should be published in our auction catalog and then given to every auction tag buyer that buys it, that's a successful bidder for auction tags. But I think those two things would go a long ways to protect the integrity of the auction tag process into the future.
Yeah, great comments, Charlie. Gray, any thoughts on what we need to do better, how we can be better, I guess, organizationally, but then also, I guess, as hunters and, you know, trying to protect this? You know, it's such a great time at Sheep Show. It's such a huge revenue generator for what we do. And how can we ensure that we get to do this? Have you given that any consideration?
Charlie, I think your concept is great, and Kyle, it chimes right into your comment you made earlier on social license, and I think we, you know, again, to be, you know, be intellectually honest, we need to look at how, you know, what are the optics of these things. There's, you know, there's the wealth envy. But then there's also the special treatment. You know, Charlie, you made a comment on, you know, you bought a hunt at the face value to ensure that the winner was going to be treated like, you know, like a buyer off a show floor. Well, the truth of the matter is these special permits often have, you know, special privileges that go along with them. Early seasons, extended seasons, and in a couple of cases, Arizona being one of them, a 365-day season. And you know, I think we as wild sheep and wildlife conservationists should be scrutinize those and look at them and say, you know, is that what we're attempting to do? Is not only is someone getting to the front of the pack, but they may be getting special privileges that no other person receives, and maybe those should be looked at. I think that's an important thing to do. You know, some of the tactics that are used, and Charlie, you pointed out, you know, fair chase you know, we can look back at a taking of an elk years ago, and you know, the team that took the elk was, you know, 15, 20, you know, specialists, and that's a little unseemly. You know, I look at some of the photos that we have, and you know, there's a team of 10 people, 12 people with one sheep. Now, you know, optically, they may think, oh my gosh, you know, that guy had, you know, had an entire, you know, football or rugby team out there, you know, helping him get his sheep. The other fact of the matter is that, you know, they're so special that a lot of us are more than willing to help just so we can be on a sheep hunt because we're not, you know, but we're not hunting. So, you know, but I think we need to be mindful of that. And again, that's part of that social license is what, you know, what is the optics of what we're doing? And then as Charlie pointed out, you know, the behavior of the buyer itself, or him or herself, and that is, you know, to be focused in on the conservation of the species and the betterment of the species, not just some special privilege, special date, special time, special disposition, or assuming that because you bought the tag, everyone else should be, you know, working for you. So I think we need to look at all those things critically and honestly, and see if we can put a better face on this. So, you know, the general public, you know, sees the good on it and not the.
Yeah, well said, Greg. A lot to process there, and oh, definitely controversial, right? You think of an auction permit buyer that I think in Alberta now you get 365 days a year to go and do your hunt, and yeah, again, that's controversial for anyone else that doesn't have that opportunity, but take that away from them now. And, you know, well, what did I just pay my $500,000 or $400,000 for? Right. So, yeah, not an easy solution. Gentlemen, we could go deep on this. This is such a big issue. And I think we've just scratched the surface, but we've done it on some pretty relevant issues. And I think we've given our listeners a pretty broad perspective on some of the challenges, the risks, the money involved. The way I look at it, for me, it's the threat to conservation. You know, it's conservation dollars, significant conservation dollars. And so obviously that's the sort of thing that concerns me. Before we sort of sign off here, any last thoughts or any words of wisdom or parting words that we haven't hit on tonight, Gray or Charlie?
You know, Clay Brewer has a statement and, you know, a mantra or a vision that he, they always said, and he goes, you know, all this that we do, you know, the good, the bad, the challenges, we should just be focused on that ram on the ridgeline. And I would expand that to be that ram, that ewe, or that lamb on the ridgeline. And I think if everything that we do is through that prism, you know, I think, Kyle, we're gonna get into a good space. Let's focus on the resource, and if what we're doing is right for the resource, I think others will come along.
Well said, Gray. Charlie?
Yep, I think I'm pretty much complete with what I've shared, Kyle. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for that perspective. You are sort of, like I said, at the coalface, Gray. You've been in the trenches for a long time. I won't start saying the years because people realize that you look younger than you actually are. And then Charlie, I know that you were in that battle trying to defend the auction permit in Arizona, and you've been doing such great work in Arizona and then now on the national level. So gentlemen, to you both, and then Gray, the video that you did, that is that video that you did to sort of explain the auction permits, is that available publicly? I think we shared that via Mountain Minutes.
Yeah, it sure is.
Probably on the website, is it?
Yeah, you go on the Wild Sheep Foundation website, and it's on our blog, and it was the back in March, on the permit deal. But yeah, there's a 6-minute video and kind of explains the history of the tags and then, you know, the significance of North American sheep conservation, but in particular Arizona. And we do plan to do a video on this that's much broader. That's, you know, it's kind of, Kyle, what you've just touched on this podcast, but, you know, try to do it in a video form and then show not only the how much, but what's, I think, so important, the why, and then what is accomplished. So yes, great deal of money is raised. Why is it raised? And what does it accomplish? I think those are the things we're going to need to make sure that we're articulating well.
Yeah, well said, Gray, for sure. So, gentlemen, thank you both. For our listeners, anyone that's never been to Sheep Week, go down, check it out, go to Reno. It's the energy. You know, when you go to a Saturday night auction, like Gray said, and you're selling $6 million, $106,000 average item sale on an auction, it's just staggering, mind-blowing, and it's so much energy and excitement in the room. When you know that money is going straight to conservation, looking after the resource that we all care so deeply about. So, gentlemen, with that, we're going to call it an evening. Thank you so much. And I'm sure we'll be talking on this issue again. And just really appreciate certainly your insight, but more importantly, what you've done to look after the things that we all care about and certainly the wild sheep resource.
Thank you.
So thank you both.
Thanks, Kyle.